Good afternoon and welcome. It's good to see everybody here. Hope you'll take out a Bible and follow along. I forgot to have it announced this morning, but this afternoon Judith is traveling, and so that's why she's not here with us. If you were in the Wednesday night class on Hebrews, this, I suspect, is going to sound pretty similar to you. It wasn't actually the sermon I intended to present. It's one third of the sermon I intended to present. If you'd like to hear the story about that, ask me afterwards. I'll tell you about it. But I've fleshed it out a little bit, but it's going to be somewhat similar if you were in that Hebrews class, I suspect. I don't recommend this movie. But I was watching a movie when I was much younger, watching it on television when they used to edit movies, and even then I'm not sure that it was such a good movie to watch. But it was a baseball movie, and it was about this, it included this one guy who was really, really fast. And he got onto first base, and the first baseman said, "You look like you're going somewhere." He says, "I'm going about 90 feet. And so the pitcher gets ready to throw the ball, and he winds up, and that guy at first base just takes off, and he just flies down the line, and there's no way the catcher's going to get him, but the catcher gets the ball, throws it to the second baseman, the dust flies, and when it settles, he's about 3 feet short of the base. He tags him and he's out. The Bible talks about that exact thing happening to us, about coming up short. And there are multiple places where that is referenced. One of the ones that we actually quote rather frequently is Romans 3 and verse 23, where we come short. And this lesson is on don't come short. But in Romans 3 and verse 23, it says, "For all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God." There is something that God deserves. His glorious nature deserves and expects from us, and we have all failed to reach it. We've come short, or as he says there, we fall short. It's the same word that's used also in Hebrews chapter 4 and verse 1. In Hebrews chapter 3, the Hebrew author begins to talk about these Israelites that have come out of Egypt following Moses, headed towards the promised land. And with a few exceptions, none of them make it there. They come so close to the very doorstep of their promise, but they don't make it in. And so in Hebrews chapter 4 and verse 1, the Hebrew author makes mention of them in this regard. He says, "Therefore let us fear, if while a promise remains of entering his rest, any one of you may seem to have come short of it." And so he looks at that generation. He says, they didn't enter in. Did you see the transition saying, make sure that doesn't happen to you? Don't come short. And it happens again in Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 15. When the Hebrew author here says, "See to it that no one comes short of the grace of God, that no root of bitterness come up causing trouble, and by it many be defiled." And so here you have the grace of God, this incredible gift handed to us for heaven, for salvation, eternal life. And he says, watch out that you don't come short. That you don't begin this journey, but not quite finish it. Not quite get there. Now this word that is used as far as coming short, it's not always translated that way. There are a lot of other ways that it's translated. If you were to look at Matthew 19 and verse 20, the rich young ruler says, "What am I still lacking?" Jesus' response in Mark 10:21 is, "This is what you still lack." It's coming short. This is what you don't have. In Luke 15 and verse 14, it's the prodigal son, and he comes to a point of where he is impoverished. He was coming short, is the idea here. He has a complete lack. So when we say come short, we're really talking about this idea of really missing something. In Philippians 4 and verse 12, Paul talks about his circumstances in life and how he understands how to get along with wealth, right? But he says, "I know how to get along with humble means, and I also know how to live in prosperity. In any and every circumstance, I have learned the secret of being filled and going hungry, both of having abundance and suffering need." So there they've translated coming short as suffering need. Or in Hebrews 11 and verse 37, as he goes through and he talks about these men of great faith, here the same word now is just translated as being destitute. I mean, it's a complete failure. When we're talking about coming short, it's not like you got really close. You may have gotten really close, but it's a complete failure, a complete lack, destitution, spiritually impoverished. So the question is, how do we avoid it? I mean, I don't want that to happen. Do you? To become a Christian, to begin down this journey, to have the grace of God right in front of us, to have the opportunity to make it to heaven, and then find out we didn't make it? I don't want that. So what went wrong? Did they fail because they weren't perfect? You know, isn't that how so often we feel? It's like, unless I'm perfect, I'm just not going to make it to heaven. As long as you feel that way, you will never feel like you're going to make it to heaven. Because we're never going to be perfect. It wasn't because they were perfect. They came really close to entering the promised land despite their imperfections. In other words, what I'm saying is that the people that left Egypt had all sorts of flaws. And it's not hard for us to read and to examine and understand. They had all sorts of flaws, but through the mercy of God, they got through them and got to the doorstep of the promised land and almost entered in despite all of those flaws. Those flaws aren't what kept them out. I wrote down some of the things that they did. This is just talking about the time when they leave Egypt to the time that they come to the spies. There's a lot that happens. There's 38 years that happens after that. Just those first 2 years or so. And in that time, God makes a rule about the Sabbath, and instantly they break it. He makes rules about about manna, and they break it. He makes rules about committing idolatry and immorality. He does this with the Ten Commandments, right? Moses commands them. Oh, no, no. God commands them. They hear the voice of God saying, "You shall have no other God. You shall not make graven images." And approximately a month later, you've got a golden calf that they have made and they've fallen down and they've worshipped. And it says after they did that, they rose up and played. And in the New Testament, we find out what that's talking about is it's sort of a euphemism for sexual immorality. And they still almost made it. Almost. And throughout this time, almost through the whole journey, they keep complaining against God. And not just complaining against God, but they're really making accusations against God. "You brought us out here to die. You're not a good God. You're here to kill us." Complaining and complaining and complaining. And you know what? Despite all of that, they almost made it. Despite all of that, they could have made it. The reason that they failed to enter the promised land was not because they weren't perfect. That wasn't it. The reason we don't make it to heaven isn't because we're not perfect. We're not going to be perfect. You're never going to be perfect in this life. I don't even compare to Paul. If we were going to put ourselves on a righteousness scale, I'm not even going to get on it if Paul's on one side. I don't belong with Paul, but Paul looked at himself and he says, "I haven't reached it." Right? Philippians chapter 3, verses 12 through 14. Paul says, "Not that I have already obtained it or have already become perfect, but I press on so that I may lay hold of that for which I also was laid hold of by Christ Jesus. Brethren, I do not regard myself as having laid hold of it, yet, but one thing I do, forgetting what lies behind and reaching forward to what lies ahead, I press on toward the goal for the prize of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus." So Paul isn't looking at saying, "I'm finally perfect enough, I'm going to finish this race." That's not it. He says, "I'm not perfect enough. I've got all these flaws. That's why I'm running. That's why I keep going and keep pursuing." You may look at other people and think they're so much more righteous than you, but even the people you're looking at don't compare to Paul. Everybody you know who you think is so great needs to pursue because they're not. We all have our flaws. I have added on here, Paul, the tortoise and the hare. Do you remember the story of the tortoise and the hare? It's not a biblical one, but it's a biblical concept. The hare is really, really fast, should win the race, right? He's so much better than the tortoise. He doesn't win the race. You know what wins the race? Never quitting. And so in Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 1, it says, "Let us run the race that is set before us with endurance." You're not going to be perfect, ever. But you keep going. And if we keep going, we can finish this prize. We can finish this race. Despite our imperfections. I mean, just think about that. The people that broke the Sabbath, that created an idol, that complained against God, came that close to entering the promised land anyway. But that doesn't answer our question. I do want to point something out, though. I don't want you to get the wrong idea. Don't think sin is minimal. Don't think it's unimportant. Don't mistake the mercy of God to mean that sin is insignificant. Because when the people sinned in this process, they came very close to being annihilated instantly. Remember, isn't that what happened when they had the golden calf? God said to Moses, step back, I'm going to destroy them. And then the mercy of God does step in and he doesn't destroy them. But there's that moment. You sin and you have aggravated God to the point where he wants to wipe you off the face of the earth. Don't think sin is insignificant. Don't accept it in your life. We work to remove it. But understand that just because you have sinned occasionally in your life, just because there are things you struggle with, doesn't mean you won't enter the promised land. You still can. So I want you to have that proper attitude, the understanding that sin is really, really awful and something we must avoid. But at the same time, I don't want you to look in your life and see, well, there's sin, I've messed up, then feel hopeless. Jesus came to give hope to the hopeless. So why did they come short then? There are a few reasons. There are a few reasons why we come short. One is we start the journey, but we don't mature. That's what it's talking about in Romans 3 and verse 23 with this idea if you fall short of the glory of God. God has an expectation of us and we don't live up to it. And even though God understands and recognizes you and I are not going to be perfect, he still has expectations of you. And sometimes we don't live up to it. God has put in all sorts of effort in us and he expects it to have some results. In Hebrews, this is what we're looking at. In Hebrews chapter 6, the Hebrew author talks about a piece of land. And he says, starting in verse 7, and really we should be looking at the whole context. I'm hoping you were in class so you did. It says, for the ground that drinks the rain which often falls on it and brings forth vegetation useful to those for whose sake it is also tilled receives a blessing from God. But if it yields thorns and thistles, it is worthless and close to being cursed, and it ends up being burned. And so he talks about this. If God produces, gives you rain and then you give him plants, you're blessed from God. But if instead God gives you rain and he's showering blessings upon you and the result is we do nothing. We don't give him anything of benefit. We give him weeds and thistles, things that aren't desired. Well, then we are close to being cursed. Other passages just go right over that point and say, you're in trouble. This is what I believe was going on in Matthew 18, verses 18 through 19. Jesus is coming into Jerusalem. He sees a fig tree. He wants a fig. He sees no figs. He curses the tree. It dies. You think it was really about the tree? Do you think that's what that was all about? Jesus is teaching us, I'm quite convinced, he's teaching us something about Jerusalem, saying, I'm coming to Jerusalem and I expect to find something in you and I'm not finding it. I'm expecting you to have grown, to be spiritually mature, to have reached this goal, not perfection, but a certain level of growth. And I don't find it, and so you're in trouble. And so then you consider that concept and how it plays out in Matthew chapter 3 and verse 10, and then we'll see it in other passages as well. But the axe is already laid at the root of the tree. Therefore, every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. John the Baptist isn't saying everybody who's not perfect will be destroyed, but he's saying everybody who doesn't bear fruit will be. If you're not making progress, you will be. You won't finish the prize. You won't get to the end. You will fall short of what God expects from you. So Matthew chapter 7 and verse 19. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Sounds similar, doesn't it? Matthew chapter 25, verses 41, and it really goes on from there. But then he will say to those on his left, depart from me, accursed ones, into the eternal fire which has been prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry and you gave me nothing to drink. I was thirsty and you gave me nothing to drink. I'm pretty sure I'd said that wrong. I was hungry, you gave me nothing to eat. I was thirsty, you gave me nothing to drink. And he goes on from there. But you get the picture, right? I didn't expect you to be perfect. I had an expectation and you failed to meet it. You didn't mature into any fruit. You had opportunities to serve me and you didn't. To do good and you did nothing. Jesus says in John chapter 15 and verse 2, every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes away. Brothers and sisters, look at that word again. Every branch. You are no exception. Every single one of us, God has an expectation, and that is that we mature, that we grow. He's not looking at us and expecting us to be perfect. That should be our goal. That should always be our goal. Every day should be our goal. But he does have an expectation that we will bear fruit. And if we don't, well, then we come short. We come short of his expectation. We come short of the prize. And so the question then is, are you maturing or are you stagnant? Are you like that hare? Maybe you were doing really great spiritually at one time and you just kind of assumed that you're going to make it to heaven. Or maybe you're just careless about your eternal soul and so you're no longer putting diligent effort into growing in knowledge and growing in good deeds and you're not trying to grow and so all you've done is like that hare, you found a tree, you laid down and you slept and you lose. Or maybe you're like the turtle. And you would like to be a whole lot faster than you are. I would. Spiritually speaking, I wish I could do more righteousness, be better than I am. But do you keep going? Keep improving. Tortoises are a pain to watch, aren't they? I mean, it's just labor. I just want to pick them up and take them to the next place. But step by step by step, to the promised land they go. They get there if they don't quit. We get there if we don't quit. If we mature to what we're supposed to be. So why did they come short? The second reason, the first is they didn't mature as they ought to. The second reason is they started the race, but they didn't finish the race. And that's really what it comes down to. The people of Israel started the race. They went really far on the race, but they didn't finish. When it finally came down to the ultimate moment, the key time in their life, that's when they failed, and that's when they didn't enter into the promised land. They did it because of a lack of faith and obedience, is what he says in Hebrews chapter 3. In Hebrews chapter 3, he says, they've set an example for us. What kept them from entering in was because they didn't believe and they didn't obey. So he says in verse 16 of Hebrews 3, for who provoked him when they had heard? Indeed, did not all those who came out of Egypt led by Moses? And with whom was he angry for 40 years? Was it not with those who sinned, whose bodies fell in the wilderness? And to whom did he swear that they would not enter his rest, but to those who were disobedient? So we see that they were not able to enter because of unbelief. What a funny thing he does right there. In verse 18, he says, here's why they didn't enter in, because they were disobedient. And then in the very next verse, he says, here's why they didn't enter in, because they didn't believe. Well, which one is it? And the answer is yes. Those two are so closely connected. I don't understand why people have problems with this. Why is it that people don't get baptized? Is it because they don't believe God's word or because they're disobeying God's word? And the answer is yes. It's just yes. They don't believe God when he says baptism now saves you. They don't believe God when they say baptism is into Christ and puts Christ on you. They don't believe God when they say it is for the forgiveness of sins. They don't believe it. But then he commands it and they don't do it, so they're disobedient. So which one is it? It's yes. And that's what they were. God says, go take the land. And they didn't believe that God would be with them. Or they didn't believe that God was sufficient. But the bottom line is, they didn't do it. Mix those two things. At those pivotal moments when we lack faith in God and disobey him in that way, we don't enter in. So he goes on in chapter 4, verse 1, therefore let us fear if, while a promise remains of entering his rest, any one of you may seem to have come short of it. For indeed, we have had good news preached to us, just as they also. But the word they heard did not profit them because it was not united by faith. And those who heard. They didn't have enough faith. Then he goes down in verse 6. Says, therefore, since it remains for someone some to enter it, and those who formerly had good news preached to them, it failed to enter because of, he's made the switch again, disobedience. And then verse 11, therefore, let us be diligent to enter that rest so that no one will fall through following the same example of disobedience. Faith, unbelief, and disobedience keeps us out. If God makes promises and you don't believe it, if God tells us to do something and you don't do it, you got a real problem. But really, they just lacked endurance. Because you know what? That faith and obedience, they had most of the time. That doesn't sound right, does it? We think of that generation, we think of all the things they do wrong, and we think about all the negative things. And for good reason, because they don't enter the promised land. We're looking for negative things. Have you ever tried to find the positives? To go back and look at all the good things they do? Those people do some good things. They leave Egypt and follow Moses. When Moses is standing between two walls of water, they walk through. I gotta tell you, that takes faith. 1 Corinthians chapter 10 calls that their baptism. It says they're baptized into Moses at that point. That was a point of no return, saying we're gonna follow Moses no matter what. They did that. You know what else they did? Every day they looked out, and every moment they looked out over the tabernacle to see the cloud and decide, do we stay or do we go today? And it's interesting. I encourage you to read sometimes Numbers chapter 9, verses 15 through 23, in this passage that talks about the way God worked. And if you were there, God made no sense. He didn't tell you where you were going, and he didn't tell you when you were going or how far you were walking or what time you were leaving. You just looked out, and if the cloud got up and got ready to go, pack up, we're going. And it didn't matter what time of day. It talks about that happening in the middle of the day. It didn't matter what time of night, because sometimes that happened in the middle of the night. You got up and you started going. And for a period of about 2 years, that's exactly what they did. They got up, they went wherever God said to go, and they followed him wherever he went. For as long as he went, they kept walking. And when he stopped, they stopped. And now they wanted to go to the promised land. They wanted to get to the promised land. But if God stayed, they stayed. And then they get an opportunity to help build the tabernacle. And so it's going to be by a free will offering. You've been given wealth. It's your wealth. Will you give it to God to build a tabernacle? And they start giving and giving and giving and giving. And it says here, I don't have my passage up there. Oh, I do. Exodus 36, verses 5 through 7. After all of this, Moses has to command them, stop it. You've given more than we need. These are the people that went pretty far and did pretty good things that don't enter the promised land. It's because all these good things they did, they didn't do for long enough. They followed the cloud until it came to the border of the promised land, and they wouldn't follow it in mentally. They said, no, even if God goes in there, we won't. We can't. There's giants. You're following a cloud. It's a pillar of fire at night, and you're worried about giants. Well, that's them. But after doing so much right then, right there, that's when they failed. So Hebrews chapter 10, the Hebrew author points this out and says, you guys are the same way. To his first audience, he says, you guys have experienced so much. You've already gone through so much. Don't quit now. He says in verse 32, but remember the former days when after being enlightened, you endured a great conflict of sufferings, partly by being made a public spectacle through reproaches and tribulations, and partly by becoming sharers with those who were so treated. For you showed sympathy to the prisoners and accepted joyfully the seizure of your property, knowing that you have for yourselves a better possession and a lasting one. Therefore, do not throw away your confidence, which has a great reward. For you have need of endurance, so that when you have done the will of God, you may receive what was promised. For yet in a very little while, he who is coming will come and will not delay. But my righteous one shall live by faith. And if he shrinks back, my soul has no pleasure in him. The Hebrew author has great confidence in them and says, that's not us though, is it? But we are not of those who shrink back to destruction, but of those who have faith to the preserving of the soul. We don't quit. We press on. If we quit, If after everything, we quit. So Paul says the same thing then in 1 Corinthians chapter, let me look at these other passages. We need to endure until the end is the emphasis here. Matthew chapter 10 and verse 22, Jesus says this. It's not enough for us to be good Christians for a good portion of our life. We've got to do it to the end. Whatever may come in between. You will be hated by all because of my name. And it's the one who has endured to the end who will be saved. In Hebrews, when he starts talking about how they came short and we shouldn't. In Hebrews chapter 3, he begins by talking about how we have to be faithful till the end. He says in verse 14, "For we have become partakers of Christ if we hold fast the beginning of our assurance firm." Until the end, until the very, very end. They did it for a while. They did it for a good long while, but not till the end. And so Paul looks at himself, and Paul had done so much. Paul had traveled so far, and he'd endured a good amount. I mean, we suffer some, right? But none of us have had people throwing rocks at us until we stopped moving and they were good and sure we were dead. We haven't had that happen. Paul's going to get to a list in 2 Corinthians. He's going to get to this list of the things he's gone through. And he's going to talk about how many times he's been beaten and whipped, how he has been shipwrecked and spent a day and a night in the sea. Imagine how abandoned he felt then. And Paul then says in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, in the light of all of these things that he's experienced, he says, "Do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but only one receives the prize? Run in such a way that you may win. Everyone who competes in the game exercises self-control in all things. They then do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable. Therefore, I run in such a way as not without aim. I box in such a way as not beating the air. And I discipline my body and make it my slave so that after I have preached to others, I myself will not be disqualified." He's saying, I will not quit. I will not let all of that I've gone through be a waste. Now, what have you gone through? We all have done something. We have been faithful perhaps for many, many years. Sacrificing time. Perhaps you have been sacrificing physical pleasures. You have been overcoming temptations for the sake of God. Perhaps you have gone through great suffering for the faith. Perhaps you've gone through all of these things. What a waste to have gone through years of that and then at the end, for whatever reason, quitting. And so they came short because they went far, but not far enough. Don't quit. No matter where you're at in your life. I know some of you are getting older. Actually, truth is, I believe all of you are getting older. I haven't met anybody getting younger yet. You're getting older, right? Some of you are, you're advanced, you're experts at that. Life gets hard. And I've seen the pain and the discouragement as the body fails. And sometimes I've heard people question, you know, why is God letting me go through this? Why doesn't He take me? You can have those questions and you can have those challenges, but what you must not do is quit. Finish. The race. You're so close. And you know what? That's true for all of us. No matter where we're at in life, we're so close. Don't come short. Finish the race to the very end, to the last day. Because beyond that last day is eternal life and eternal joy and absolutely no regret. Since we can come short, the Hebrew author suggests some things. He suggests in Hebrews 4 and verse 1 something completely contrary to what the world suggests, as they say, once saved, always saved. It doesn't make any sense. But the Hebrew author is saying, we can come short, therefore, let us fear. Let's be aware of the circumstances. Let's be aware of our souls. And let's say we need to press on to maturity. We need to press on to good deeds. We need to keep going no matter what we face. We should fear failure. Not God failing, but us failing. We should fear that. And thus press on carefully every day. He goes on then in verse 11, he says, let us be diligent. Not casual in our religion. Diligent. And then he says in Hebrews chapter 3, verse 12 through 13, and again the idea in Hebrews 12 and verse 15, let's watch out for each other. You're not the only one who can fall. There are people in your life that perhaps you've known in the church who are just rocks. And they fall away. Everybody around you can fall away. Watch out for each other. You see somebody who's starting to watch things they shouldn't be watching, listening to false doctors that are leading them astray, help them. You see people that have an evil, unbelieving heart growing within them, help them. You see people that are falling away from their diligence and they're no longer focused on God and they're instead focused on their life or their work or their family or their pleasure or whatever else, help them. See to it that no one comes short of the grace of God. That's not just watch out for yourself. That's let's watch out for one another. Like the people of Israel. Like Joshua and Caleb look out at that audience and say, no, I'm begging you. Let's take it. Let's finish this journey. Since we have come short of God's glory, and we have, God deserves better than you. And he deserves better than me. We have all sinned and all fall short of the glory of God. And no matter how much good deed you do, you can't fix it. What we need to do is very simple then. We need to fall on our knees before God and call upon him for his grace. And so the Hebrew author, he talks about that, doesn't he? In Hebrews chapter 4, verses 15 through 16. He says, for we do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who has been tempted in all things as we are, yet without sin. Therefore, let us draw near with confidence to the throne of grace so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in time of need. In Romans chapter 5, verses 6 through 11, it's a passage that talks about we should turn to Jesus because he has done everything to save the wicked people, to save the sinners, to save the helpless, to save the enemies of God, to save us. You have sinned against him. Turn to him. He'll help you. He sent his son to save you. And so then we have this beautiful passage in Matthew 11, 28 through 30, where Jesus looks at a crowd like us, people like us, sinners like us, and he says, come to me, all you who are weak and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. We've already sinned against God. Let's come to him for the grace and mercy we need. If you're not yet a Christian, you need to be baptized into him. That's what you need to do, to call upon him for his mercy and his grace and his forgiveness. If you're a Christian, finish the race. If you have quit for some reason, if you have fallen away for some reason, set the things aside and get back on this racetrack towards heaven and finish the race. If we can help you anyway this afternoon, won't you come right now as we stand and as we sing?